Okay. So I usually do the Namo Tassa first of all because it's suttas. Word of the Buddha. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhasa. So when we have these sutta classes, which you asked for, we have the word of the Buddha, and some of those sutras are very deep, some are not so deep, and you ask for somewhere in the middle. And so we're going to start off with some sutras from the Citta Samyutta, because they're also a little bit of fun as well. Interesting, it's not just giving teachings, because the gentleman concerned, Citta, he was a lay person. He actually was a non-returner, an anagami, and a very well-known person. He used to be a general before. So, I don't know about his wrong livelihood, maybe he wasn't such a good general, and he didn't kill that many people. Which is why he didn't have so much bad karma. But anyway, there's a few interesting stories. So we start off with, it's about, I don't know, there's 8 or 9 of these suttas, but anyway, connected to citta. Start off with something called a fetta. On one occasion, a number of elder bhikkhus, that's monks, were dwelling at Machikasanda in the wild mango grove. Now, don't ask me where Machikasanda was. It was somewhere in India. Of that I can be certain. And it was also not that far away from Nalanda, the big university town, next close to Rajagaha. And we'll find out why that is a safe assumption in a moment. And they're staying in the wild mango grove. On that occasion, when the elder monks had returned from their arms round, after their meal, they assembled in the pavilion, like a sala, where they were sitting together when this conversation arose. Friends, the fetta, and the things that fetta, that's the samyojanas. Those are the things which keep us from being, actually stop us from being a stream winner. Things like personality view, or things like belief in rites and rituals, cravings and all that stuff, the fetters. Are these things different in meaning and also different in phrasing? Or are they one in meaning and only different in phrasing? Are they the same, only just different words saying the same thing? Some elder monks answered thus, friends, the fetter and the things that fetter are different in meaning and also different in phrasing. Make it the tie, and what they tie onto, is it the same or are they different? Other elder monks said, no, friends, the fetter and the things that fetter are one in meaning and different only in phrasing. Now, on that occasion, Citta, the householder, had arrived in Meghanapatika. Is that right? Oh, yeah, Meghanapatika, on some business. Then Citta, the householder, heard, a number of elder monks, it is said, on returning from the alms round, had assembled in the pavilion after the meal, were sitting together, and this conversation arose. You see that these things are always repeated in the translation which I have been doing recently. I try to just cut that conversation as short as possible, the repetitiveness. But anyway, then Citta, the householder, approached those elder bhikkhus, paid homage to them, sat down one at one side and said to them, I have heard, venerable sirs, that when a number of elder bhikkhus were sitting together, this conversation arose. Friends, the fetta and the things that fetta, are these things different in meaning and also different in phrasing? Or are they only one in meaning and different only in phrasing? That is so, householder. Venerable sirs, the fetta and the things that fetta are different in meaning and also different in phrasing. I will give you a simile for this, since some wise people here understand the meaning of a statement made by means of a simile. Suppose, venerable sirs, a black ox and a white ox were yoked together by a single harness or yoke. Would one be speaking rightly if one were to say, the black ox is the fetter of the white ox, and the white ox is the fetter of the black ox? No, householder. The black ox is not the fetter of the white ox, nor is the white ox the fetter of the black ox, but rather the single harness or yoke by which the two are yoked together. That is the fetter there. And that word yoked, yoga, samyojana, all the same root word. So too, friends, the eye is not the fetter of things which the eye sees, nor a sight the fetter of the eye, but rather the desire and lust that arise independent on both. That is the fetter. The ear and sounds, the nose and odors, the tongue and tastes, the body is not the fetter of tactile objects. The mind is not the fetter of mental phenomena, nor a mental phenomena the fetter of the mind, but rather desire and lust that arises there, independence on both. That is the fetter there. It is a gain for you, householder. It is well gained by you, householder, in that you have the eye of wisdom that ranges over the deep word of the Buddha. Now the reason I read that out was because there was an example of somebody teaching the monks. It's not always the monks which teach the lay people. It's not always the monks which teach the nuns. It can be the other way around, and often it is. However, you can see that even though that Chitta, the householder, he was very respectful all the way, always took the lower seat, but would actually teach the monks something. So he was a very interesting fellow, Chitta. Any comments so far? Oh yeah, okay. Yes, yeah. Well, if where there's desire, there will be ill will. When you want something, often you will not get what you want. You will be frustrated. Just like this stupid machine, it's now turned itself off. Come on, get back on it. Where did you go? Yeah, I warned you. So sometimes where there's something you want, soon it turns into anger. Or ill will, when things don't go the way you want them to go. So desire and lust, it's all connected with ill will. I was only playing there, by the way, I treat my little tablet very well. That's the second warning. He's gone off again. Oh my goodness. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Oh, no, only one question. Because so often if you treat machines with kindness, then they work well for you. And you cannot beat that anecdote, which actually happened. I checked it out. Believe it or not, these things occur. About that German Anagarika, who stayed here a long time ago. For 1 year he stayed here. And then he went off to Frankfurt University, I believe, to continue his studies. And because he'd meditated and been very peaceful, that when he... Oh, maybe I have to move away because I can't see the camera, that one. Yeah, okay, that's why that seat was empty. There's always a reason for some things. But anyway, that when he was at the university, the first day on campus, he was the gentleman, he walked past the ATM machine. Where the ATM machine, as he walked past, made this very strange sound. He called it a gurgling sound, which he'd never heard before. And he didn't really worry about it, but He thought that that machine was welcoming him onto campus. So every time he went past that machine, he always gave it loving kindness. Dear ATM, may you never run out of euros, because that's in Frankfurt. Dear ATM, may people never hit you when you find they've got no bank balance left. Dear ATM, may your electricity never run out. Dear ATM, may you always be happy and well. And so he, I think he's being crazy and mad, like most people would say. But what happened was that one day he was having his lunch just within maybe 10, 15 meters of the ATM machine. No one was around. It was a nice warm day. No one was there. And for the second time, he heard the gurgling sound. And he turned around and he saw what happens, the result, the good karmic result of when you give loving kindness to an ATM. A 20 euro note came out. And he said, this is impossible. No one had put in their credit card. No one had pressed any buttons. It just came out by itself. And he, being a poor student, you know, he went over there and he picked up the 20 euro. He said he waved just to make sure, does this belong to anybody? No one was around. There was only one person there, him. So he put it in his pocket. Thank you, ATM. So that is what happens when you are kind to machines. Okay, now you behave. Okay, so, sutta number two on here, because these are sort of connected. Isidatta. On one occasion, a number of elder monks were dwelling at Machikasanda in the wild mango grove. Then Chitta, the householder, approached those elder monks, paid homage to them, sat down on one side and said to them, Venerable sirs, let the elders consent to accept tomorrow's meal for me. The elders, bhikkhus, consented by silence. That's why. They consented by silence. Okay. Three times you've got to do these things. That was the old way of saying yes in those days. Consent by silence. But don't always take that to mean that if you ask Venerable Chanda to please accept tomorrow's meal from me, maybe that because I'm not paying attention, not saying anything, or me say that, don't pay any attention. So silence was the way in those days. Otherwise they say it's inconvenient. So elder monks consented by silence. Then Chitta the householder, having understood that the elders had consented, rose from his seat, paid homage to them, departed, keeping them on his right. When the night had passed, in the morning the elder monks dressed, took their bowls and outer robes, went to the residence of Chitta the householder. There they sat down on the appointed seats. Then Chitta the householder approached the elder monks, paid homage to them, sat down to one side and said to the Venerable Chief Elder, Venerable Elder, it is said diversity of elements. In what way, Venerable Sir, has the diversity of elements been spoken of by the Blessed One? So even when you go out for lunch, as a monk, you still have to be questioned about the Dhamma. As they say in Australia, there's no such thing as a free lunch. Not even for monks or nuns. Now anyway, when this was said, the Venerable Chief Elder was silent. The second and the third time, Chitta asked the same question. The second and the third time, the Venerable Chief Elder was silent. On that occasion, the Venerable Isidatta was the most junior monk in that Sangha. Then the Venerable Isidatta said to the Venerable Chief Elder, Allow me, Venerable Elder, to answer Chitta the householder's question. Answer it, friend Isidatta. Now, householder, are you asking thus? Venerable Elder, it is said, diversity of elements. In what way, Venerable Sir, has the diversity of elements been spoken of by the Blessed One? Yes, that's what I'm asking. The diversity of elements has householder has been spoken of by the Blessed One thus. The eye element, what the eye element sees, which is the sight element, eye consciousness element, ... the mind element, material phenomena element, mind consciousness element, with every one of the six consciousnesses, the six senses. Every one of those, that there is, they say, a different element. Then Chitta the householder, having delighted and rejoiced in the venerable Isidatta's words, with his own hands served and satisfied the elder monks with various kinds of delicious food. When the elder monks had finished eating and put away their bowls, they rose from their seats and departed. Then the venerable chief elder said to the venerable Isidatta, "It is good, friend Isidatta, that the answer to this question occurred to you." "The answer didn't occur to me," said the chief elder. "Therefore, friend Isidatta, whenever a similar question comes up at some other time, you should clear it up." It's always good when you become a chief elder or a chief nun later on to have a nice junior nun around who can always answer the questions for you if you're a bit tired or something. Anyway, it comes on to the second Isidatta Sutta. Then Chitta the householder approached the elder monks, paid homage to them, sat down to one side and said to the venerable chief elder, "Venerable elder, there are various views that arise in this world. The world is eternal, or the world is not eternal. The world is finite, or the world is infinite. Or the soul and the body are the same. The soul is one thing, the body is another. The Tathagata, the Buddha, exists after death or does not exist after death, or both exist and does not exist after death, or neither exists nor does not exist after death. These, as well as the 62 views mentioned in the Brahmajala Sutta," that's the first sutta, which in the Digha Nikaya, possibly the first sutta which was recited by Ananda at the first council after the Buddha's passing away. Now when what exists do these views come to be, and when what is not existent do these views not come to be? When this was said, the venerable chief elder was silent. A second time and a third time the venerable chief elder was silent. On that occasion, who was there? Venerable Isidatta was the most junior monk in that Sangha. Then Venerable Isidatta said to the Venerable Chief Elder, "Allow me, Venerable Elder, to answer Chitta the householder's questions." "Answer it, friend Isidatta." "Now, householder, are you thinking, Venerable Sir, there are various views that arise in this world. The world is eternal, ... These as well as the 62 speculative views mentioned in the Brahmajala. Now, when what exists do these views come to be? When what is absent do these views not come to be?" "Yes, Venerable Sir. As to the various views that arise in this world, householder, the world is eternal, etc., when there is identity view, the sense of me, a self, a view of a personal essence, these views come to be. When there is no identity view, these views do not come to be." "But Venerable, how does this personality view, identity view, Sakkaya Ditti, the view of a permanent essence, come to be?" "Here, householder, the uninstructed worldling who has no regard for the noble ones, is unskilled and undisciplined in their Dharma." This is just someone who hasn't penetrated and is not a streamliner. "They regard for the body as self, or form as self, or self as possessing form, or form as in self, or self as in form. Or regards feeling, perception, volitional formations, consciousnesses as self, or self as possessing consciousnesses, or as consciousness as in self, or self as in consciousness, in such a way that identity view comes to be." And this, I'll explain it in a moment. "And Venerable, how does it not come to be? Here, household, the instructed noble disciple, they don't regard that. They regard, the self as possessing form, as form as in self, or self as in form. Do not regard feeling as self, perception as self, additional formation as self, or consciousness as self. or self as in consciousness in such a way that identity view does not come to be. And the nicest way of explaining this, which I just added a few moments ago when I was in the office, this is from the Patisambhita Magga. This is the commentary here. One who is an Aryan, a stream winner or something, does not regard the mind as a permanent essence, like the flame and the hue of a lamp, using the analogies of those days. So the lamp and the hue, they're not the same. And of course, when the flame goes, the hue goes. Does not regard the mind as possessing a permanent essence, like a tree has a shadow. So the shadow is not the tree, but trees have shadows. So it's not connected that way. Does not regard the mind as within a permanent essence, like the scent in a flower. And does not regard a permanent essence as within the mind, like a jewel in a casket. Does not regard a soul as inside something, nor as an attribute, like the scent in a flower, or like the consequence, like a tree has a shadow, or like an identity. But anyway, that's more deep stuff. Oh, I've done it again. Nice, sorry. So, Chitta asked, Venerable Sir, where does Master Isidatta come from? I come from Avanti householder, which was more in the west. There is, Venerable Sir, a clansman from Avanti named Isidatta, an unseen friend of ours who has gone forth. Has the Venerable One ever met him? Yes, householder. Where is that Venerable now dwelling, Venerable Sir? When this was said, Isidatta was silent. Is the Master Isidatta? Yes, householder. Then let Master Isidatta delight in this delightful wild mango grove at Machikasanda. I'll be zealous in providing Master Isidatta with robes, arms, food, lodgings, and medicinal requisites. Now what happened next is one of the reasons I read out this. That is kindly said, householder. Then Chitta the householder, I've been delighted and rejoiced in the Venerable Isidatta's words, with his own hands served and satisfied the elder monks with the various kinds of delicious food. When the elder monks had finished eating and had put away their bowls, they rose from their seats and departed. Then the Venerable Chief Elder said to the Venerable Isidatta, It is good, friend Isidatta, that the answer to this question occurred to you. The answer did not occur to me. Therefore, friend Isidatta, whenever a similar question comes up at some other time, you should clear it up. Then the Venerable Isidatta set his lodging in order, and taking bowl and robe, he left Machikasanda. When he left Machikasanda, he left for good and never returned. Why do you think he did that? Sorry? There's a little bit of friendship there, but he was an unseen friend. And number two, it is because... Too famous, yes. His fame, because he was so wise, even wiser than the senior monk there at the time. And the result of that fame started to get requisites. He said, I'll look after you, whatever you get. And that's one thing we try, if we possibly can, to avoid. As will be seen in the next sutta, Mahaka's miracle. On one occasion, a number of elder monks were dwelling at Machikasanda in the wild mango grove. Then Chitta the householder approached those elder monks, paid homage to them, sat down to one side and said to them, Venerable sirs, let the elders consent to accept tomorrow's meal from me in my cow shed. When I first read that, I thought, hey, in the stinky cow shed? Can't you find a better place in your house? You know, if you invited the great Venerable Chandavisuddhi to a meal, would you invite her in your cow shed? But in those days, they would actually, before they'd invite the monks, they would smear the walls with cow dung. It was supposed to be very fragrant for people in those days. I don't know why, but you can see how fashions change. But yes, the elder monks consented by silence. The chief of the household, having understood that the elders had consented, rose from his seat, paid homage to them, and departed, keeping them on his right. When the night had passed, in the morning the elder monks dressed, took their bowls and outer robes, and went to the cow shed of Chitta the householder. There they sat down on the appointed seats. Then Chitta the householder, with his own hands, served and satisfied the elder monks with delicious milk rice made with ghee. When the elder monks had finished eating and put away their bowls, they rose from their seats and departed. The Chitta householder, having said, "Give away the remainder," follow close behind those elder monks. Now on that occasion, the heat was sweltering in the hot season, and the elders went along as if their bodies were melting because of the food they had eaten. Now on that occasion, the Venerable Mahaka was the most junior monk in the Sangha. It's always the most junior ones. Then the Venerable Mahaka said to the Venerable Chief Elder, "It would be good, Venerable Elder, if a cool wind would blow and a canopy of clouds would form and the sky would drizzle." "That would be good, friend." Then the Venerable Mahaka performed such a feat of spiritual power that a cool wind blew and a canopy of clouds formed and the sky drizzled. So, the next time you have a haze in Singapore, then occurred to Chitta the householder, such is the spiritual power and might possessed by the most junior monk in this Sangha. Whoa. Then the Venerable Mahaka arrived at the monastery, and he said to the Venerable Chief Elder, you know, when they got back, it was nice and cool now, "Is this much enough, Venerable Elder?" "That's enough, Venerable Mahaka. What's been done is sufficient, Venerable Mahaka. What's been offered is sufficient." So it's very helpful to have a monk like that in your entourage. Keep you cool. Then the elder monks went to their dwellings, and Venerable Mahaka went to his own dwelling. Then Chitta the householder approached the Venerable Mahaka, paid homage to him, sat down one side and said, "It would be good, Venerable Sir, if Mahaka would show me a superhuman miracle of spiritual power." "Then, householder, spread your cloak upon the veranda and scatter a bundle of grass upon it." "Yes, Venerable Sir," Chitta the householder replied, and he spread his cloak upon the veranda and scattered a bundle of grass upon it. Then, when he had entered his dwelling and shut the bolt, the Venerable Mahaka performed a feat of spiritual power, such that a flame shot through the keyhole and the chink of the door and burnt the grass, but not the cloak. Oh. Unfortunately, we can't do that at this time here in Bodhidharma Monastery or Jhana Grove, because there's a fire ban. You do need, at this time of the year, a permit from the bushfire brigade before you light any fires. Chitta the householder shook out his cloak and stood to one side, shocked and terrified. Then the Venerable Mahaka came out of his dwelling and said to Chitta the householder, "Is that much enough, householder?" "That's enough, Venerable Mahaka. That's enough. What's been done is sufficient. Venerable Mahaka, what's been offered is sufficient. Let Master Mahaka delight in the delightful wild mango grove at Machikasanda. I'll be zealous in providing Master Mahaka with robes, arm food, lodgings, and medical requisites." "That is kindly said, Venerable householder." Then Venerable Mahaka set his lodging in order, and taking bowl and robe, he left Machikasanda. When he left Machikasanda, he left for good, and he never returned. Otherwise, you get every Tom, Dick and Harry coming over there asking for him to do a psychic feat, and a monk would become more like a circus performer than a real monk. And also, you get famous, so you have to disappear. And And my first time I went to Wat Pa Pa, this is a real story, you know, from my own experience. There was a monk there. I was only ordained a few days. Even though I was the most junior monk, I wasn't nowhere near like some of these other monks. So, one of these other monks, you know, he had good meditation, just an ordinary northeastern monk. And it's said that he could hear sounds from a long distance away. It's one of those psychic powers. They call it the divine ear. You can hear people talking even though they're 5-6 kilometers away, even further away. Just focus and you can hear. And now, if any monk or nun makes a claim like that, you know, it has to be investigated. Because you can't just, if it's a lie, they're just boasting. It's a disrobing offense. So it has to be investigated. So the monks investigated and they tested him out. This was in a long time. This was in 1975. And they had to test him out. So I think a couple of monks went to the Warren Market. This was in Wat Pa Pong. They get 6 kilometers, maybe 7 kilometers away. And there they had this conversation. They decided what they're going to talk about or whatever. And he heard it all. Even though he's in Wat Pa Phong, a long distance away. So it was true. He had that psychic power. Everyone understood he did. So the next thing which happened, the next day, he sat on Ajahn Chah's seat. He said, well, I'm as good as Ajahn Chah. So, you know, I could be a teacher as well. What happened was when you have psychic powers and you show off, or any other great skills, that is when that you become proud as well. So Ajahn Chah took him up into his room and talked to him. And after talking to this monk, the monk apologized. First of all to Ajahn Chah. The reason I know about this, I remember this, because in the dining hall, there may be about 50 or 60 monks at that time, he bowed to every monk, including me, even though I was so junior, I didn't know what was really going on at the time. Every monk he bowed to and asked forgiveness. And then after the meal, he too took his bowl and robe and disappeared, and I never heard whatever happened to him. Just like in the time of the suttas. I thought it was really cool. One of the reasons why we keep such things as psychic powers quiet. Now I'm going to skip a couple of suttas here. Let's go to... Okay. I'll do this one over here. Because this is for... How's the time? Oh, going plenty of time here. For Godata. That's number 7. Because I'm keeping a promise here for someone who's sitting in a chair, not so far away. On one occasion, the Venerable Godata was dwelling at Machikasanda in the wild mango grove. Then Chittada household who approached the Venerable Godata, paid homage to him and sat down at one side. The Venerable Godata then said to him as he was sitting to one side, household of the measureless liberation of mind, the liberation of mind by nothingness, the liberation of mind by emptiness, and the signless liberation of mind. Are these things different in meaning and also different in phrasing? Or are they one in meaning and different only in phrasing? And Godata replied, there is a method.
There is a method, Venerable Sir, by which these, I think this is Chittara's answering. There is a method, Venerable Sir, by which these things are different in meaning and also different in phrasing. There's another method by which they are one in meaning and different in only phrasing. And what, Venerable Sir, is the method by which these things are different in meaning and also different in phrasing? Here, a monk dwells pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with loving kindness. Likewise, the second quarter, the third quarter, and the fourth quarter. Thus, above, below, across, and everywhere, and to all as to himself, He dwells pervading the entire world with a mind imbued with loving kindness, vast, exalted, measureless, without hostility, without ill will. As it was a couple of years ago, I think, it took me a while to get round to it, Nicholas, that you asked me for where that chant comes from. And I noticed it's still in the glove compartment of your car. So I thought I'd better do something about this and answer it. So here's one place in the suttas where you can find it. So I do keep my promises, only sometimes it takes a bit of a while. And that's the Bhavalika. He dwells pervading one quarter with a mind imbued with compassion, with a mind imbued with altruistic joy, with a mind imbued with equanimity. Likewise, the second quarter, the third quarter, and the fourth quarter, that's above, below, across, and everywhere, and to all as to herself. They dwell, providing the entire world with a mind imbued with equanimity, vast, exalted, measureless, without hostility, without ill will. This is called a measureless liberation of mind. What venerable sir is the liberation of mind by nothingness, hereby completely transcending the base of infinite consciousness. This is in the Arupa states, aware that there's nothing. The monk enters and dwells in the base of nothingness. This is called the liberation of mind by nothingness. What is the venerable sir, the liberation of mind by emptiness? Here a monk gone to the forest or the foot of a tree or to an empty heart reflects thus. Empty is this of self, or what belongs to self. This is called the liberation of mind by emptiness. I'm just going to pause here because in your meditations, sometimes after you've had a quiet meditation, a peaceful, happy, stable meditation, don't just ask yourself what was there. Ask yourself what is missing, or what was missing. What was that meditation empty of? What wasn't there, which is often there? And what is, Venerable Sir, the signless meditation, liberation of mind? Here, with non-attention to all signs, distinctive features, a monk enters and dwells in a signless concentration of mind. This is called a signless liberation of mind. This, Venerable Sirs, go, emptiness, nothingness, emptiness, that's right. Then this Venerable Sir is a method by which these things are different in meaning and also different in phrasing. And what, Venerable Sir, is a method by which these things are one in meaning and different only in phrasing? Lust, wanting. Sometimes instead of saying lust, I call it like wanting, desire, craving. Venerable Sir is a maker of measurement. Hatred is a maker, or ill will is a maker of measurement. Delusion is a maker of measurement. It's an interesting thing to see that when you want something, is it good enough? Do you want more? Less? There's measurement there. And ill will. You're not good enough. You're not like my first partner, which I had, my ex. Or you are not like, I often tell these monks, I measure them. I say, when I was a young monk, you wouldn't have monks like this. Ill will can be a maker of measurement. And, what else is there? For bhikkhuni, whose taints are destroyed, these have been abandoned, cut off of the root, made like palm stopes, obliterated, so they're no longer subject to future arising. To whatever extent there is measureless liberation of mind, the unshakable liberation of mind is declared the chief among them. Now that unshakable liberation of mind is empty of greed, hate, and delusion. In other words, it's empty of anything which can make a measurement. Lust, Venerable Sir, is something, is a something. Hatred is a something. Delusion is a something. For a bhikkhuni whose taints are destroyed, these have been abandoned, cut off at the root, made like palm stumps, obliterated so they are no more subject to future rising. To whatever extent these are liberations of mind by nothingness, the unshakable liberation of mind is declared the chief among them. Now that unshakable liberation of mind is empty of greed, hatred, and delusion. Greed is a maker of signs, hatred is a maker of signs, delusion is a maker of signs. You know that because you just need to put that middle finger up the other way. If you're hating somebody, that's a maker of signs. And delusion, a maker of signs. For a monk whose taints are destroyed, these have been abandoned, cut off of the root, made like palm stumps, obliterated so no more subject to future rising. To whatever extent there is a signless liberation of mind, the unshakable liberation of mind is declared the chief among them. Now that unshakable liberation of mind is empty of greed, hate and delusion. This, Venerable Sir, is a method by which these things are one in meaning and different only in phrasing. It is a gain for you, householder, it is well gained for you, householder, and you have the eye of wisdom that ranges over the deep word of the Buddha. So there is Citta talking to the monks and teaching them. Now, the next sutta is one of the reasons I just like this one. Oops, come on, go down. Nigantha Nataput.
Can I ask a question on this sutta?
Don't you, why not? Okay, yeah.
Yes. When you mentioned about meditating on nothingness, right?
Oh.
Just now on this sutta.
Yeah.
It
leads to the same. Is it the same in meaning and phrasing, or is it different in meaning or different in phrasing? So if it's anatta, non-self, no permanent essence in there, you can have it in one way to look at it that way if you wish. That it's, because it's signless, you can't even sort of see, put anything on there. Which makes it look as if it could be. It's usually the animita citta vimutti. Now, which is the one? It's the nothingness. What's the other two again? The immeasurable, the unshakable. Sorry, no. Sorry? Oh, the emptiness. It's usually the emptiness. Is the one which they usually say in the suttas as connected to anatta. But hang on, what are we doing here? My mind has already gone into the next one. Measurement, the. Where they got? Oh, here we go. It's just the signless, the emptiness, and the nothingness. Okay, yeah. So the signless, the sunyata, yeah, that's, the sunyata one is anatta, yeah. Nothing there. So all those signs by which you say who you are, all those signs of being a male, female, monk, old, young, when all those disappear, then what's left?
Teacher that will go to the realm of the emptiness. So,
what is the catch? Oh, the nothingness one over there. That is the arupa state. But the arupa state of nothingness, it's said in places like the Ataka Nagara Sutta, that's in the Majjhima Nikaya. Well, that's one of the bases. They have 11 bases. On which that the attainment of cessation, full enlightenment, can be reached. And that's the four arupas, sorry, the four apamana states, the measureless liberations of metta, karuna, mudita, upeka, those four. And there is also the four jhanas and the three arupa states. The first three arupa, including nothingness. You say that is a legitimate place from where you can receive, or you can sort of disappear into the full sort of enlightenment. That's where you can cut off all fetters once and for all. So, the Buddha also says his first two teachers had achieved that, and he achieved that as well as a bodhisattva, but never achieved enlightenment, said it was not possible. So what is happening there? And That is an old controversy. And the only thing which makes sense is those two teachers did not achieve the state of nothingness or the state of neither perception nor non-perception. In words, yes, but in reality, no. Because those arupa states can only be reached through the jhanas. In fact, the arupa states are almost like a special case of the fourth jhana, which does mean that if Alarika Lama and Uttaka Ramaputta had achieved those immaterial states, they would have had to have done that through the jhanas. They achieved the jhanas first. And if they'd achieved the jhanas, then so would the Buddha have had to achieve those jhanas. But he clearly hadn't achieved the jhanas under them. Otherwise, that when he, after 6 years of asceticism, when he looked back upon all his teachers and thought, nothing has worked, I don't know what I have to do now, it was then he recalled, as a 6 or 7 year old child, when his father was under the rose apple tree, and his father was doing the ploughing ceremony, and the little kid entered upon the first jhana. And this is from the Mahasatchika Sutta, number 36 of the Majjhima Nikaya, where, recollecting, this is on the Noble Search, recollecting that why was I afraid of that jhana which I had experienced as a kid under the rose apple tree. And he said, perhaps that could be the path to Bodhi, to enlightenment, to awakening. And the insight came that it was that path to awakening. So the question always you ask is, if that was the path to awakening, jhanas, you have to do jhanas to get through to the arupa states. And why did the Buddha have to remember all that time ago, instead of just remembering under those two teachers? There's inconsistencies there. So the only way to overcome those inconsistencies is to accept that they said that they were arupa states, but they weren't the real thing. Not the real thing. It's just that sometimes that people can, well, you know this sometimes, you see, when I went to see some famous teachers in the United States some years ago, and I was surprised that they were so kind to me and invited. I thought they were Vipassana teachers. And when they invited me in, they were really asking me all questions about jhanas. So I thought you were just, weren't interested in jhanas. Said, no, we are. But then what they were talking about was what we call, or what they called, jhana light. L-I-T-E. A very American way of calling about jhanas. Not really the real thing. Sounded like it, but not the sort of the full, really getting into it. With, you know, the five senses totally beyond your reach. Yeah, of course. Like Devadatta.
No, I mean, so his previous two teachers could have attained the jhanas they said they attained, but they couldn't see.
But no. And there's a reason why the jhanas weren't. The next sutra is actually comes up very in the right place for everyone here, because the jhanas were almost unknown. They were sort of things which were the degree of comfort and ease on your body which is required to achieve those jhanas, to have them easily available, was such that it wasn't part of the spiritual path. When the Buddha decided to stop his asceticism, his five friends, the first who became the first five disciples, gave up on him. He said, you're just giving up, you're taking the easy path. And that, when he took the easy path alone, he realized that it's so hard to get these deep meditations with a body which is so emaciated and just so weak through exertion. So, he
ate, rested, washed, and then when his body was, if you like, healed and strong, then he went to seek a very pleasant place to meditate, next to a river, in a garden, and he chose the shade of a tree, got some grass to make a nice saffu, had a beautiful meal from Sujata, and then was ready to actually to make the last step in his meditation. Through the jhanas, under the Bodhi tree, became enlightened, became our Buddha. And so in those days, to get those jhanas, like even here sometimes, people say, oh, Ajahn Brahm, you make it too soft for us. Having your own en-suites, nice food, and you can go for walks, it's not strict, and get up in the mornings, even now the aircon for people. It's too soft. The only thing we really need is a golf course, and this will qualify as a resort. But there's a reason for that. Why? Because in that comfort, it makes it possible for you to get those jhanas, to get deep in meditation. So this is one of the reasons why the Buddha is very unlikely he could have ever got those, or those Buddha's teachers would ever have achieved those four jhanas. Otherwise there would be a huge, huge contradiction. Why didn't the Buddha achieve those four jhanas under those two teachers? If he did, why did he have to recall all the way back to a 6-year-old, 7-year-old boy? But there's also another reason, which is coming in the next sutta.
Sorry, Ajahn, can I ask one more question?
Yeah, okay, go on. We'll get to the next sutta one day.
Buddha, I mean, you were saying that he achieved the first jhana when he was 6 or 7 years old.
Yeah.
So when he came back, before becoming the Buddha, is it possible that he is already a Sakadagami?
Yeah.
So one returner.
Yeah.
So he doesn't achieve the four attainments under the Bodhi tree. So he was already a Sakadagami.
Already a once returner. But even though you're a once returner, would you know it?
Anagami.
No, no, sorry. Anagami is a non-returner. Sakadagami is a once returner. And the reason you say that, okay, here we go on this one. Reason for that, saying that, is, oh, if you really want to, we can have a look at the Gatikara Sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya. And the Gatikara Sutta was the Buddha remembering one of his previous existences. And he said he was passing a town with Ananda and said, at this town there was a potter called Gatikara and his best friend called Jyotipana. And So Jyotipana was Gatikara's best friend. And this was a long time ago, in the time of the previous Buddha, Kassapa the Buddha, not Siddhartha Gautama, but Kassapa the Buddha. So Gatikara was a devoted disciple of Kassapa, probably one of the most famous of the lay disciples of Venerable Kassapa. And that Gatikara's friend was a Brahmin, but Gatikara's friend Jyotipana never liked this religion, this Buddhism, to the point that he even said bad things about Kassapa the Buddha. But Gatikara he loved his best friend so much that he said, I'll have to get him to see the Buddha somehow or other. You know what it's like? You may have a husband or a wife or a best friend, and you know they'd really appreciate going to listen to a talk or learning meditation, but then, nah, that's just a load of old bunkum. But eventually, Gatikara persuaded, actually physically, got hold of his hair and started pulling him. And he said, wow, this must be really important for you, said Jyotipada to his best friend Gatikara. So he went to see Kassapa the Buddha.
And when he saw Kassapa the Buddha, he was really inspired. So much so that he went one further than Gatikara and he ordained. He was a disciple of Kassapa the Buddha. The only reason Gatikara could not become a monk was he had blind parents he had to look after. Other than that, he would have ordained. So anyway, Jyotipanna became a monk. Gatikara carried on as a layperson. The sutta carries on with a story of amazing just how Gatikara would give everything, even the roofing over his house and the food, everything he would give to the Buddha. It's an amazing merit we get from this. So anyway, when the Buddha told that story to Ananda, he said, "I was Jyotipanna," said the Buddha. "I was that Brahmin who said bad things about the Buddha, the previous one that is, and I became the present Buddha." And it shows many things. First of all, and if you ever look at the Dhammapada Samyutta, there was even Gatikara, because he was an Anagami. After he passed away, he went into the Sunawasa, where Anagamis go, and that he came to congratulate Siddhartha Gautama Buddha under the Bodhi tree. He said, "We used to live in the same village in previous life. Now you've become a non-returner, and you're a Buddha. Congratulations." They came to congratulate two old friends. But the interesting part of that is, there in the previous life, probably in a very close previous life, we have the main suttas in the Majjhima Nikaya. There we have Gatikara and Jyotipanna. Jyotipanna becoming a disciple of Kassapa. You'd have thought some with that degree of spiritual qualities and strength, studying under a Buddha, no less, would have gained something. You're not a stream winner. Maybe a once returner. And to me, that makes there's a lot of supporting evidence, such as it is said that once returners, the majority of them, are reborn in the Tusita realm before they come to this earth for their last life. And there we have, we all know the Buddha descended to this realm from the Tusita realm. And when he was born, a special person, he lifted up his finger and said, "This is my last life." A once returner, how did a little kid know that? So we can never be sure, but there's lots of supporting evidence that maybe Siddhartha Gautama, when he was born, was a Sakadagami. Now, if a person is even a stream winner from their previous life and they get reborn in this life, how do you know you're a stream winner when you're first born? Maybe the first weeks of life you can remember things from the previous life, but then it all goes dull as your brain takes over the mind, and you become just an ordinary boy, just like Siddhartha Gautama. He got married, for goodness sake, and he had a kid. He did all the things which probably a boy would do. But nevertheless, he always would be inclining towards some sort of spiritual life. He'd have that ability, just as a kid, to actually just didn't know what he was doing, to get a jhana. That's pretty special. But then, later on, if you were a stream winner in your previous life, you have to re-experience that in this life. You're pulled in that direction, and you have to start meditating, and the experience reoccurs of seeing through all that delusion. You're a stream winner again, especially for Siddhartha Gautama, non-returner. Sorry, a once-returner. And then from there, sitting under the Bodhi tree, is about to become enlightened. After the jhanas, the first watch of the night, what did he remember?
His previous lives, yeah. Oh, you surely would have remembered the previous life under Kassapa, the Buddha. You can't miss that one. You remember what the Buddha taught him. So did the Buddha himself discover the Dhamma? Or did he remember his teacher, Kassapa the Buddha, and from those teachings remembered under the Bodhi tree from past lives, they have understood karma, they have understood the Four Noble Truths. The whole cycle going round. But anyway, that's in the Katawatu, the points of controversy. So sometimes people say, no, you can't say that. But anyway, before we go too far, Nigantha Nataputta. It was Jyotipala. Okay, it's close enough. Jyotipala, yeah. Nigantha Nataputta. You all know who he is? He was the founder of the Jains, otherwise known as Mahavira. And what a weird thing it was that two of the major world religions occurred at the same time in almost the same place with Buddhism and Jainism. And they were always, it seemed to be, competing. When one did one thing, another one wanted to do the same. Because we call that keeping up with the Jainses. You must have seen that coming. On that occasion, Nigantha Nataputta arrived in Machikasana together with a large number of Nigantas, Jains. Chitta the householder heard about this, and together a number of lay followers approached Nigantha Nataputta. They exchanged greetings with Nigantha Nataputta, and when they had concluded their greetings and cordial talk, sat down to one side. Nigantha Nataputta then said to him, householder, do you have faith in the ascetic Gotama? Remember, he calls him ascetic Gotama, not the Buddha, because this is basically his contemporary, his adversary. When he said, there is a concentration without thought and examination. Quite a concentration, a stillness, without thinking, without vitaka vichara. There is a cessation of thought and examination. That's second jhana. What he's actually saying, Nigantha Nataputta said to him, householder, do you think there is such a thing as a second jhana? What does Chitta answer? In this matter, Venerable Sir, I don't go by faith in the Blessed One when he says there is a second jhana. Well, I'm lost again, I should stop stopping this. Oops. Go on down here. Okay, where have I gone? There we go. Okay. In this matter, sir, I don't go by faith in the Blessed One when he says there is a second jhana. When this was said, Nigantha Nataputta looked up proudly towards his own retinue and said, see this, sirs, how straightforward is this Chitta, the householder. How honest and open. One who thinks that thought and examination can be stopped might imagine he could catch the wind in a nest or stop the current of the river Ganges with his own fist. Yeah, see? So, Gotama is wrong. And Chitta replies, what do you think, Venerable Sir? Which is superior, knowledge or faith? Knowledge, householder, is superior to faith. Well, sir, to whatever extent I wish, secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, I enter into one of the first jhana, which is accompanied by its movement of the mind, with rapture and happiness born of seclusion. Then to whatever else extent I wish, with the subsiding of thought and examination, I enter in the second jhana, then the third jhana, then the fourth jhana. Since I know and see this, Venerable Sir, in what other ascetic or Brahmin need I place faith regarding the claim there is a concentration without thought and examination, the cessation of thought and examination? Because I experience that. When this was said. Nigantha Nataputta looked askance at his own retinue and said, "See this, sirs, how crooked is this chit of the householder, how fraudulent and sneaky." Just now, Venerable Sir, we understood you to say, "See this, sirs, how straightforward is this chit to the householder, how honest and open." Yet now we understand you to say, "See this, sirs, how crooked this chitter is, how fraudulent and deceptive." If your former statement is true, Venerable Sir, then your latter statement is false. But if your former statement is false, then your latter statement is true. So that was chitter being very sneaky to Venerable Nigantha Nataputta. One of the reasons I mention that is there we have one of the most famous, if probably not more famous, teacher alive at that time, who didn't know anything about the jhanas. Certainly didn't even thought they were possible, which was weird. When you think, if jhana was just so well known, Nigantha Nataputta never knew it. He might have said, "Oh, it doesn't lead anywhere," but he didn't think it was even possible. So, it is now 5 minutes past 5. So those of you who have some more questions, there is the opportunity this evening at, what time, about 8 o'clock, isn't it? 8 till 9, to ask those questions in more depth. So what you do, there is a basket outside, and you can write your question in that basket, and I will attempt to answer it. So that is the basket case questions for this evening between 8 and maybe 9:05 or 9:10 or 9:30 or sometime like that. That question and answer time for this evening. So I hope you enjoyed some of that. For some of you it may have been very deep. For some of you it may have been a little bit funny. Some of you about people with psychic powers, and you always keep them quiet because otherwise it causes too much problems. I may say some more things about that later on tonight if you wish. But for now, that's enough. Sadhu! 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 Very good. Okay. Yeah.
It's tomorrow that sutra is going to be at 3 o'clock.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Tomorrow, 3 o'clock is the sutra. We have to finish on time there because tomorrow is full moon day. And it is the last day of the rainy season retreat. So the monks have to do a ceremony that day, and the nuns, and actually the lay people don't, but the monks and nuns have to. And so that we'll assemble in the hall of Bodhinyana Monastery, and there we'll do a little ceremony, and that'll be followed by on those fortnightly meetings. We always have a Sangha meeting, so we discuss about what we're doing for the next couple of weeks and many other little things. So that's tomorrow, because it's going to start about 4:15, 4:30. That's why I have to be over there as soon as the sutta class is finished. But there'll still be time for interviews in the morning, and many time for interviews in the rest of the day, rest of the week, sorry. So that is coming soon. Okay, so I did ask, do you prefer interviews or sutta class? But you can have one but not the other, so decided on sutta class. So hopefully the interviews, you don't really need those until you've got something to talk about. Just getting into it. Okay, so we can now bow and do what we need to do.